Okay, Mr. Schweitzer, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brett Schweitzer from the Federal Defenders here for Mr. Hurt. At this time, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay.
Thank you. Police have a tremendous amount of authority and discretion in conducting traffic stops. Any violation will justify a stop, even if the purpose is to indulge a different hunch. Police may command the scene. They may remove and cuff motorists. The one thing that police can't do is prolong the stop to hunt for other crimes when they lack reasonable suspicion.
Well, from your submission, Mr. Schweitzer, I use the term Rodriguez moment. You've used that in your brief. What was the Rodriguez moment in this stop?
The most readily identifiable moment is at 3:45 when Officer Gonzalez pauses the DUI investigation to assist Officer Cannon in the car.
Well, let me challenge you on that and ask you a question or two about that very thing, the Rodriguez moment. First, let's leave, just for analytical purposes for a moment, Officer Gonzalez to the side and ask what Officer Cannon is doing. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I've watched the tape and tried to figure out when the markers are, and I think others have done this and said, you know, when things have happened. But Officer Cannon does something a little boneheaded and gets into the cab at about 2:52, it looks like, on the tape.
That's correct.
And then he starts shining his flashlight around, and that's right after the 3 minute mark. It's about 3:10, 3:13, something like that. His testimony is that when he's looking back there and looking at the bucket and looking at Mr. Hurt and the front passenger seat person, he's watching and seeing and saying to them, show me your hands, keep your hands out, and they're not doing it. And it's the furtive movements and the refusal to obey his command which prompts him to say, something's wrong. And that, it's not until almost like 20 seconds, 30 seconds later, half minute, something like close to that Officer Gonzalez even stops talking to the driver. So this looking around in the cab is going on for about a half a minute, where Officer Cannon testifies, they're doing stuff that's making me suspect bad things, while Gonzalez is still talking. So why isn't the Rodriguez moment occurring before Officer Gonzalez stops and says, I got to go up and help my partner?
There are two responses, Your Honor. First, there's a factual error, I think, in your premise. The testimony from Cannon is that there was some intermittent compliance. They showed hands, it was cold, but he was very specific that he did not deem this to be, a safety issue or reach the threshold of a frisk until 4:33 on the tape, immediately before he exits the car. That is about a minute after Gonzalez stops the DUI. So just factually, he was in the car for sure, in the truck, Cannon was, before. But in terms of picking up reasonable suspicion for a frisk, the testimony is quite clear that comes after. Now,
well, when you say the testimony is quite clear that comes after, he may say, he might hit the point where he says, I'm getting you out of the car at 4:33. But he never testifies, does he, that I wasn't worried about this, I didn't have any suspicions. I mean, he's got suspicions, and those suspicions are mounting. Is it your legal position that under Rodriguez, it's only when the officer says, now I will frisk, that at that moment, that is the statement by the officer, that is the legally salient moment? Because even if there was suspicion before that, if it wasn't acted on, it wasn't reasonable suspicion.
No, Your Honor, there's two. We have to, and this is the second point I wanted to make. The issue of when the Rodriguez moment happens is when both officers in this two officer situation are simultaneously off mission. It doesn't have to do when he picks up. We look at that. We look at when he picks up reasonable suspicion, just like we would in any Fourth Amendment case. We identify the moment of seizure, and then we look to what they knew. And the moment, the Rodriguez moment, has to do when there are both officers are off mission. As soon as Officer Cannon goes in the car, in the truck, he's off mission. There's no dispute about that.
Well, maybe we're having a terminology issue, Mr. Schweitzer, and you can help me with this. When I'm talking about the Rodriguez moment, it's true Rodriguez as a case is about going off mission. But I think about this Rodriguez moment not as, and maybe this is my bad, not as when are you off mission, but when I'm thinking of that as a synonym perhaps for reasonable suspicion to do something which is no longer about the traffic stop, but which you can lawfully do. In other words, if the traffic stop were extended, it would be lawful. And I got a question for you about whether it's even extended at that point or not. But while Gonzalez is still talking, arguably it's not extended at all because he's still doing the traffic stop thing. But leave that to the side. If you accept for purposes of the discussion my definition of what the Rodriguez moment is, which I think is consistent with Green, which is the moment at which the police officer can say, I am no longer engaged in a traffic stop. Something else is happening now, which I can lawfully pursue. If that's the Rodriguez moment, I put it to you again, is that not possible to occur before the action of the frisk itself? Can't the reasonable suspicion exist independent of the officer pulling somebody out of the car and doing the frisk? Or is the only legally salient moment when the officer acts on the suspicion?
Well, Your Honor, I think in theory, you're looking at this objectively, right? So the officer's testimony is certainly informs that objective analysis. In other words, when we're looking at this record, you know, we're saying, okay, accepting Your Honor's definition for the moment, which I do think is wrong, I'd like to circle back to.
Okay, but
accepting that for the moment,
okay,
then you have to look at this record and say, okay, when did, you know, reasonable suspicion for a frisk arise? And if you look at the record objectively, I think that still leads leads to the same conclusion, that it's after the pause in the DUI investigation, because, you know, the best evidence we have is what occurred in the car as Cannon testified to. He didn't have a body cam that night, right? So what he testified to and what both officers in fact testified to is certainly before anybody got in the car, no safety concerns whatsoever. In fact, Cannon actually said, it was questioned about whether, you know, was there any reason to frisk him? And he's like, no, absolutely not. So then we have Cannon get in the car or get in the truck, and we have, it's a February night at 2 a.m, it's cold. And he says, he's looking around the truck. He says, oh, show your hands. They show their hands, and so even under an objective view of that record, my position would be that moment does not arise.
That's not the finding of the district court, though. Now you're doing your own fact finding. It sounds like, Mr. Schweitzer, the district court says that and credits Officer Cannon's testimony that he found their behavior suspicious. He didn't believe that they were putting their hands back in their pocket and around their waistbands, and that Mr. Hurt was motioning toward the bucket because his hands were cold because it was February. He believed it was because they were hiding something, and indeed he thought there was a weapon involved. That's what he testified to, and that's what the district court believed. Aren't we bound by that record?
No, Your Honor. Eventually, there's no doubt. And we're not challenging that there was adequate grounds for a frisk. That was challenged below, given the district court's fact findings. We're not challenging that on appeal. What you're asking, I believe, is a different question, which is, when did that happen? And when you look at the objective record here, and I grant you, you know, it's not, we don't win just because Cannon says, I didn't have reasonable suspicion until 4:33, which he did, but that has to inform the analysis. That's really the only evidence we have. What we have is a situation where he's in the car, there's compliance, it's not perfect compliance, and the officer said, there's no immediate frisk, he doesn't pull out, he's in the car for 2 minutes. Eventually he says, okay, this is getting fishy. So I do think the moment is afterward, but let me circle back, Your Honor.
But after what? You said the moment's afterward.
The moment is after Officer Gonzalez is off mission as well. So, but let me circle back to the point of whether that premise is an accurate view of what a Rodriguez moment is. I don't think it is, because what we do is what we're doing here is the same thing we do in all Fourth Amendment cases, right? We look at when the seizure occurs, and then we freeze the frame and say, okay, at that point, was there reasonable suspicion for the seizure? Rodriguez is no different. So the Rodriguez moment happens when both, in this situation, when both officers go off mission. When that happens, we freeze the frame and we say, okay, at that point, did they have reasonable suspicion?
And when was that? What was happening at that point? Where was Gonzalez? Where was Cannon at that point?
Cannon was in the truck searching, looking around. I don't know if the government is seriously disputing that he was searching the truck or not.
He said he was looking around. He said he wasn't searching. He was looking around.
Well, we have the video, and I'll leave it at that unless Your Honors have any questions. But so Cannon's in the truck looking around. Gonzalez is at the back of the truck in the middle of the field sobriety test the video doesn't lie. He's literally stops his questioning
at 3:33. I think that's the he goes quiet. Let's put it that way. He doesn't break off questioning. He just stops and starts looking. It seems at Cannon.
So well, what he did, and I think the fairest reading the record is he's asking several questions. He then stops for 6 seconds, which is I don't think it's too debatable. If you look at the video, it's fairly unnatural. His questions, he's asking him about what did he have to drink, this and that and the other thing. He stops for 6 seconds and he says, literally, you know what? I think I'm going to go check on my partner. I think I'm going to put you in the back of the squad car. So that, Judge McKee, is what Officer Gonzalez is doing. So at that point, he's no longer pursuing the DUI. That's where we freeze the frame. Cannon looking around in the truck, Gonzalez Gonzalez deciding that he's going to go assist Cannon. And then we freeze the frame, Judge Jordan, and we say, okay, is there reasonable suspicion at that moment for another crime?
Good. And now I will stand corrected, because I believe you're right. The way Green frames it and calls the Rodriguez moment is the moment that the stop is extended. So that's the correct terminology. But in my mind, what I've been thinking is the moment for Officer Cannon, when he reaches reasonable suspicion, if it occurs before the Rodriguez moments hits, which is Gonzalez stopping the DUI sobriety test, if that occurs before that happens, then would you agree that existence of reasonable suspicion, which Officer Cannon is entitled to act upon, begins to it rinses whatever else happens after that? Because if he's got reasonable suspicion to do what he's doing before Officer Gonzalez breaks off, you never have an unlawful extension. Do you follow what I'm trying to ask?
I'm right with you, Judge Jordan, and I agree. The problem is the record. You cannot find that on this record. First of all, setting aside what we've already talked about in terms of the best evidence, what Cannon testified to, there's no testimony that, the first putting in of the pockets was 12 seconds in there's no testimony about that.
But we have a record of him looking around in the back. I mean, he's in there engaged with those guys for about a half a minute before Officer Gonzalez goes silent.
Correct. But we'd have no idea if he has, even though he didn't think he had reasonable suspicion for a frisk, we have no idea if he had, if there was anything to suggest a frisk in those first 30 seconds.
Let me follow up on that, because looking at the film, it's a weird field sobriety test. And I'm clearly no expert in field sobriety tests, but I kept looking for the field sobriety test. There was a discussion between Gonzalez and the driver. He later on said that he didn't give him a citation because he realized that he'd been drinking. He smelled the alcohol. He didn't think he was over the limit because he looked at his eyes. Well, that made me, it's a weird field sobriety test. And what struck me is while Gonzalez is back there talking to the driver, he didn't seem to me to be doing anything which would be consistent with my view of the field sobriety test. He's just talking to the guy. He asked him what he had to drink shortly after he got him out of the truck. The guy says, I had one drink. Walks him back to the squad car. Either while he's walking him back to the squad car or as soon as he gets into the squad car, Officer Connor takes his flashlight, starts looking around in the car. He says it wasn't a search. And the district court accepted that as credible. I'm not sure legally that what he was doing then did not amount to a search. It seems to me that he did. And I'm trying to find out, well, at that point, what's happened with the field sobriety test? And I was hard put to figure out what the hell was going on with the field sobriety test. A few minutes, a few seconds occur while there's some pushback, not physical pushback, verbal pushback from the driver because he did not want to get into the squad car. It's a field sobriety test. And I can ask the questions of Mr. Newcomer, but it seems to me that it's pretty obvious from looking at this thing that at least Officer Connor was going to, while that sobriety test was going on, he was going to check out these guys, check out his car. He asked the passenger what his name and for ID is. That struck me as strange. I don't know why he had to find out who the passenger was or look at the passenger's ID. It just seemed like this whole thing, from the point of time they got the driver out of the car, said he was drinking, he had a drink. It looked like, oh boy, this is my lucky day. I'm going to find something on these guys.
Your Honor, I think that's essentially what happened. Judge Officer Cannon gets into the truck immediately after handing off the driver. And so what we do know, however, is the DUI investigation started. It didn't last long because Officer Cannon got in the truck and Officer Gonzalez said, uh-oh, well, it looks like, in his words, by the way, at the hearing was, looks like something else, something more going on. And he testified that he couldn't tell what was going on in the truck. So that's why he breaks it off. So the DUI investigation doesn't last long, but we know it does start. The officers testified to their MO in DUI investigations. He, without even saying a word, comes around, picks up the driver, takes him to the back of the car, starts asking him about alcohol, questioning him. And it's only because Cannon immediately gets into the truck that is paused. So eventually, once Gonzalez decides to put him in the squad car, that DUI is in limbo. That investigation is in limbo. It doesn't come up again until Mr. Hurt is taken from the scene.
Okay, accepting that that's true, what is, if anything, the role of independent unlawful action? I mean, is there a role for the idea of attenuation in a circumstance like this? That, assume for the sake of discussion that this hadn't been suspicion followed up with a frisk, but that after Gonzalez had stopped, okay, not before, but after Officer Gonzalez had paused the DUI thing, he's walking back up to the truck, Mr. Fetter leans over and the gun falls out of his waistband, or Mr. Fetter pulls the gun out and points it at Officer Cannon. Would the assertion be, you just can't that evidence is inadmissible? Or would the, or would you concede that there's something independent, it's attenuated, it's far enough removed, that evidence is in and of itself admissible?
Your Honor is correct. There's all, when you look at exclusion as opposed to the Fourth Amendment violation, there's still a Fourth Amendment violation. When you look at exclusion, there are limiting principles, attenuation, and so forth. Two points that those can come up in cases. They have not come up here. It's the government's burden to both create a record on that and to raise it. And in fact, what happened in this case was the government, you know, there were statements later, right, at the station house. The government argued attenuation as to those statements after the fact, you know, an hour after the fact or whatever. And the district court didn't reach it. The government has abandoned even that argument.
Well, when you say they abandon it, can we affirm on any basis supported by the record, whether the government argues it, whether the district court reaches it, are we bound by a forfeiture?
Normally no, but yes, when the government has conceded the matter. And I would say it suggests here it's a waiver and a concession, even as appellee.
How so? How did they knowingly waive the argument that there could be a Fourth Amendment, there could be an exception to the exclusionary rule?
By raising it as the one piece of evidence in the district court and not as to the gun or any other evidence, and then on appeal by abandoning it wholesale. That is a concession. That's a waiver. I cite Stiegald in our brief for that point, that trumps affirming on any basis. I'm happy to provide a letter with other cases if the court would wish. But yes, your Honor's right. In a different case, under different facts, could some intervening cause break?
Well, don't take a different case. Take this case. Take this case on these facts and assume we didn't think there was a knowing waiver, that attenuation or inevitable discovery or like whatever you want to, I don't even care what label you put on it, but that, you know, we're in Justice Alito's land here where he says, you're just asking to parse this so finely that it's a little wacky, but assume that we're going to just accept the way you've framed the sequence of events and that Officer Cannon has no reasonable suspicion before 4:33 when the pause hits, after the pause is hit on the DUI investigation. On those facts, if there weren't a waiver, is there an argument to be made that once you know or you reasonably suspect this guy's got a gun, it doesn't matter the Fourth Amendment bad stuff you did, the evidence isn't going to be excludable?
Well, right at the end here, I think you put the rabbit in the hat, which is once you know that the guy's got the gun, and the hypotheticals, I understand it is, you're accepting that's not the case, but on in terms of the causation here, it's very straightforward. Again, we freeze the moment like we do in all Fourth Amendment analyses, and we say, okay, we freeze the moment, there's no reasonable suspicion, and so therefore there is no, that's the premise of the hypo, there's no justification for Mr. Hurt's seizure, and if he's not seized, they don't recover a gun from him. So the causation is direct. It is not attenuated in any way. And again, you know, the government hasn't even argued any of this.
Yeah. Okay.
So you know, there's no, this isn't a situation where, you know, if we were arguing about the station house and post Miranda and things, that might be borderline. But here,
you're acknowledging that if the gun had fallen out of his waistband, that would be one thing, but a reasonable suspicion doesn't amount to an attenuation. Have I understood that?
I think that's right. And the reasonable suspicion that comes after the violation. We just don't.
That's the point. When the reasonable suspicion arises is the key, it seems to me.
Yeah, we don't look beyond the moment of the seizure to justify or to attenuate.
You can look beyond the Rodriguez moment in the hypotheticals. If he pulls the gun out of his waistband, you're looking beyond the moment. And if it falls out of his waistband, you're looking beyond the moment. What you're saying is there's a legal difference if it's merely a matter of, I don't see the gun, but I've got ample reason to suspect there's a gun, that that's legally different in terms of attenuation than seeing the gun.
I'm sorry if I implied that. I don't think that's right, Your Honor. I think the causation analysis is the same. I think in other...
So if he pulled the gun, it wouldn't matter. Wouldn't be attenuated. If they blew it because the Rodriguez moment came earlier and Mr. Hurt pulls a gun out and points him, it's still suppressible under your view because that's not attenuated.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I mean, look at the facts. I mean, if he pulls out and instead of frisking him in the waist, he pulls it out and it falls, that's not a legal difference.
I understand your position.
Okay. But let me, if I may, just...
Mr. Schweitzer, may I put a question?
Yes.
Go ahead, Judge Martinez. Pretty much the same subject. It does appear that he, who was in the car, was making furtive movements. In other words, on two or three separate occasions, he turned around towards the back of the vehicle. And this is what Officer Cannon was observing. And then, of course, it turned out that there was a handgun involved. Mr. Hurt, in fact, had the possession of the handgun. How does that make Cannon's actions inappropriate or illegal?
Because, again, we're not challenging that eventually he developed reasonable suspicion for a frisk or that the men might be armed and dangerous. What makes it illegal is that that arose after the seizure, after the Rodriguez moment. So the moment he goes into the truck, Cannon's off mission. Now we're not arguing that you know, we're not challenging the search of the truck. We don't have standing to do that. So we absolutely agree, and we gladly shouldered the burden that we have to show that Officer Gonzalez was off mission as well. That's when Hurt's detention becomes extended. So, but once Cannon, you know, goes into that truck, that, you know, despite some sort of skirmishes in the briefing, that's a Fourth Amendment search. There's no doubt about that. He's off the grid in terms of the Constitution. And so he's off mission.
This is almost a law review exam. If he's off mission, but you said you don't have standing to challenge his actions insofar as the search of the truck. And if at that point, Gonzalez is still on mission, does it matter if Connor's off mission at that point? If the sobriety check is still going on?
So I'm not quite sure if I get your. Say, for instance, Cannon discovered something the second he looked into, you know, right after he went into the truck while Gonzalez hadn't paused before Gonzalez.
No issue. That comes in. There's no problem there.
It comes in, right?
Yeah.
So that's not a problem. So okay. We have to show both are off mission, and that occurs at 3:45. And that's before there's reasonable suspicion.
And so when
you say that's before reasonable suspicion, talk about putting the rabbit in the hat. That's your assertion about what the record shows, because your position is reasonable suspicion doesn't exist until he actually affects the frisk, right?
Well,
that is the position you've taken here, right?
That's the position, but it's not just me, Judge Jordan. You know, the government has not, or nobody's argued this. Nobody has argued that there was reasonable suspicion at that moment of the Rodriguez stop.
Well, nobody's the judge, the district court judge said, and I quote, despite contentions otherwise, evidence shows that neither the traffic stop nor the DUI investigation had ended when Officer Cannon searched Hurt. So at least the district court thought there wasn't enough of a pause. And maybe the district court logically could have thought their reasonable suspicion was mounting before there was a frisk. I mean, we're asked to look at the record, and we're asked to view the film, and we can see him looking around in the back, and we can read his testimony about what they're doing and what it's meaning to him. And that appears on the record, on the tape, to be happening before Officer Gonzalez goes silent. I mean, he's not, you know, looking in the glove box and under the car. He's engaged with them in the back, with Mr. Hurt in the back seat while the questioning is going on.
Your Honor, with respect, I think that, that takes a lot of gymnastics. And because what happened here, first of all, no one has tried to move that suspicion back. No one's argued that. And what the district court actually did, you know, granted, you can read the opinion is no one has to have perfect clarity, but the opinion basically suggests that, well, because the DUI was open, because the traffic was open, that wasn't resolved, then it was ongoing. The government sort of repeats that argument. That can be dismissed out of hand. That's not the test. Rodriguez,
as a legal matter, does the fact that officer safety kicks in mean that he's off mission? Because the unstated premise of your argument is that Officer Gonzalez is not on mission and does not lawfully have a right to go check and see whether his companion is safe, consistent with the DUI investigation. In other words, you seem to conflate what's happening with Officer Cannon and Officer Gonzalez to the extent that your argument depends upon you're saying Cannon was off mission and therefore Gonzalez was off mission when an officer safety issue arises that he responds to.
Correct, Your Honor. And let me give you my record basis for that. What we have, we know what the tape would have looked like had the general circumstances, the ratio, the hour, the neighborhood, the everything else. We know what the tape would have looked like had those motivated the safety concern. They wouldn't have started the DUI. They would have gone up to the car. They would have seen the situation. They would have called for backup. And you know what? If the stop takes 30 minutes at that point, that's fine. Because then we know the safety pause is in service of the lawful mission. Here, and we have to take the case as we have it under the facts. And here what we have is full steam ahead until Cannon gets in the truck.
No, it's not until Cannon gets in the truck. That's where I guess we're just watching a different tape. He's still talking to the man. He's conversing with the driver. That goes on for some period of time after Cannon's in the truck. It's well into Officer Cannon. I'll repeat, and I don't think anybody's arguing to the contrary. I don't know, maybe Mr. Newcomer is, but Officer Cannon shouldn't have been in the truck, but he was. He was, but he's in that truck doing what he's doing while Officer Gonzalez is carrying on his DUI conversation. The field sobriety test is happening, and it's not until well into that, by something like a half a minute or so, that he stops. And even at that point, you can't say it stopped. He just is not talking for a few seconds, and then maybe 40 seconds in, he says, I'm going to go check on my partner. I'm going to need to put you in the back seat of my car, or words to that effect. Your argument is when that happens, he's off mission. And my question to you is, do you have authority for the assertion that checking on a fellow officer's safety is off mission, that the DUI investigation, as far as Gonzalez is concerned, could not still be considered to be ongoing?
So I'll give you a legal authority, but the rest of it is factual. And I must disagree with your characterization of the tape. So let me get to that too, if I may. But on the legal point, no question, government hasn't challenged this, at least not to date. And it comes right from Rodriguez, repeated by this court in Clark and in Green, that not all safety counts, right? So safety in service of the lawful mission is part of the mission. Safety that is in service of an off-mission detour does not count. Okay.
You're basically saying they can't create an exigency, which would normally give rise to a reason to search, and then rely upon the exigency which you created to say, well, there was an exigency. I went ahead. It's like the situation, I guess, when it keeps coming to mind with plain view, in the case where the officer has a list of serial numbers of stolen video equipment, goes to the apartment, sees, and I guess, an amplifier that matches the description of something that was stolen in the burglary, but he can't tell from looking at it whether or not it's stolen, turns it around and sees the serial number and sees it and says, I was plain view. It's plain view because you turned it around.
Yeah, that's right, Your Honor. And in this context, the way to look at it is there can't be a pass for really dangerous detours, right? So, you know, that one officer's detouring, but it's really dangerous. So, you know, there's a constitutional pass because safety comes in. Obviously, that's not the law. But let me get back to the factual point, Judge Jordan. So what we have to do is we have to look at the record objectively. We don't look at the subjective, you know, views of the officers can inform the objective analysis, but you have to look at the objective reality. And I would humbly submit that when you look at this record and you look at a DUI investigation underway and the pause in the DUI investigation happening, while to all everything we can judge from the body camera is that Gonzalez is essentially staring at Cannon. He also testifies at the hearing, I couldn't really see what was going on in the car. My partner's in there in the car with two other people, blah, blah, blah. You know, we have to say that the Cannon being in the car was the triggering event for the pause in the DUI investigation. Did it happen in the first 2 seconds? No, I'll grant you that. Maybe it took 15 seconds until he finished his questions, finished the frisk. We won't even get into that. We don't have to go there here. But when he takes him back to the car, it's a fluid situation. He can't be expected. We can't say, oh, because he didn't stop the DUI in the first 7 seconds, that somehow, oh, it was related to the DUI, the safety. That's not reasonable, I would suggest.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, we've been quite a while. And Judge Fuentes, do you have any questions? Because we'll hear from Mr. Schweitzer again on rebuttal.
No, thank you.
Okay, why don't you think about it? 3 or 4 minute break, Mr. Newcomer, before we get to you. Give me a chance to run to the restroom.
No problem, Your Honor.
Okay, right back.
Thank you. The court stands in recess.
Okay. Thank you. Waiting for Mr. Spencer to come back. Mr. Newcomb, are you in a relationship to Clarence Newcomb, are you?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor, although we're both from Lancaster originally.
Then you're related. Everybody in Lancaster is a second cousin. So.
Newcomer is a more common name in Lancaster, I think, than anywhere else in the world.
Because they're all second cousins. It's like El Tuco.
Well, I won't go.
Okay. Do we have Judge Fuentes?
Thank you, Judge Jordan.
You're here? Okay.
Yeah.
We're discussing the logistics of Lancaster. Okay, Mr. Spencer, go ahead.
Well, may it please the court, Your Honor, this is Matt Newcomer, and I represent the United States government.
Can I stop? I'm sorry. Without Mr. Schweitzer's camera on, and I'm not sure he's here. There he is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't catch that. Thanks.
Can I proceed, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you. So I definitely think we're in agreement in terms of the definition of Rodriguez moment. It requires, as Mr. Schweitzer said, requires both officers to be simultaneously off mission. So I think the focus here is, you know, is appropriately on Officer Gonzalez, which is a clearer path to him being on mission the entire time. He starts a DUI investigation. About, you know, a minute and a half into it, he pauses it to check on the safety of his partner. Now, we know the safety precaution itself, that's an acceptable part of any traffic stop, any roadside detention.
Well, you stop right there, Mr. Newcomer. Is that your best argument? Because that runs you right up against Judge McKee's assertion and Mr. Schweitzer's argument that you don't get to create your own safety problem and then say, I had a safety problem.
Well, Judge Jordan, respectfully, I don't think that's what the record shows here. I don't think the record shows that the safety problem was created by Officer Cannon being inside the truck as opposed to just the general conditions.
He was. If he'd stayed outside the truck, we'd be having a very different argument. Very different argument. No one's calling for backup and nobody's putting anybody in a squad car in handcuffs when they first arrived. So it sort of stretches credibility and credulity to argue that it was the general atmosphere that was what caused Officer Gonzalez to stop talking, cuff the driver and put him in a squad car. It was the fact, and he testified to it. It was the fact that his partner was in the cab with the other people. So how I'm not sure why you're taking this path, because because that does seem to run you smack into, I created a problem. Now I get to point to the problem as the basis for what I did.
Well, Judge, I don't think that actually the record shows that it was the Officer Gonzalez was motivated to go help his partner entirely because Officer Cannon was in the vehicle.
Why else would he turns around, he sees Connor in the car, and Connor says, well, he got in the car to look around and to, I think he said, to engage with the occupant, something like that. I don't remember the exact language. But he clearly said it wasn't a search. He got in to look around, which I don't know where he was at the academy when they taught him suppression hearing 101. He goes in to look around. And it was that situation, which then very justifiably, I might add, raises a concern in Gonzalez's mind. Well, wait, my partner's back there. He's in a car with two guys. We don't know what's in that car. I got to go cover him.
I'll quote you. He says, I'm thinking, you know, my partner's over there with two unknown persons in this vehicle. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to get over there. I mean, we're not guessing. Officer Gonzalez swore to this. That's what motivated him.
I respectfully disagree on that, Your Honor. I think what he was saying was that...
I just read it to you.
Your Honor, I think there's a different way to interpret that, and I think it's a straightforward way. What he was saying was, my officer's over there with two guys in the car. He wasn't my officer's over there in the car with two guys. My point is that the record isn't clear that he was motivated solely to check on Officer Cannon because he was inside the car. But let's assume
for the sake of argument, we didn't think that was a great argument. Okay.
noted, Your Honor. So
where do you go next?
So let's assume, and I do invite Your Honors to go back and look at the video, because the idea that he turns to look at Officer Cannon for 6 seconds, it's just not on the video. The video is stationary. It's looking right at the driver, and you can see Officer Cannon in the background. It doesn't turn to look at Officer Cannon and turn back to resume. There's no indication, but putting that aside, let's say the concern arose from Officer Cannon being inside the vehicle. At that point, Officer Gonzalez doesn't know if he has a legitimate or not legitimate reason for being in the vehicle. So the test that Mr. Schweitzer wants to impose means that a legitimate safety concern, a completely legitimate safety precaution, can be tainted or invalidated because if it turns out that he checks on him and he was off mission, then the entire thing is tanked. I don't think that can be the test, because it puts the officer in a really difficult spot of having to determine in real time, gee, is my officer, my fellow partner, is he in trouble enough that it's worth me going over there to check on him to risk losing my mission? Gee, I'm not really sure.
At that point, though, what was he doing to complete his mission? I mean, that's what blows my mind. It would have been a better case had, I know Mr. Spicer wasn't the trial attorney, but had the trial attorney, defense counsel, put on expert evidence from a police officer who trains in this area, what constitutes a field sobriety test? When you were a patrol officer and did a field sobriety test, what were you doing to determine whether or not somebody was over the influence? That's not on the record. But still, this is one, pardon my expression, one weird-ass field sobriety test. He talks to the guy, asks him what he had to drink. But that is the field sobriety test. But that interchange, that interaction stops because of a concern. I said before, it's justifiable that Connor is maybe in some jeopardy because he's crawled into the car with these guys. So he goes over to check. And it does seem like if we follow your argument, we have a situation where the Fourth Amendment stops because an exigency is created, not necessarily an exigency which arises from a legitimate Fourth Amendment concern, but an exigency is created. Here it's a safety concern. And therefore, based upon the exigency, you get to do an end run around the Fourth Amendment. It looks like that's what we're dealing with.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because if the concern is the fact that Officer Gonzalez or Officer Cannon was inside the vehicle, you know, had something been seized while he was inside the vehicle, we fully admit there was no probable cause for him to search the vehicle. There's an avenue to pursue a Fourth Amendment violation there. It's a suppression motion to suppress whatever was recovered from inside the truck. That's not the facts here.
But Schweitzer can't pursue that. Mr. Hurt can't pursue that because he doesn't have an ownership interest in the car. So he doesn't have standing to go that route. So the only thing left to him, it seems to me, if he had standing to raise the argument, if this is a Pennsylvania court or Pennsylvania law, and Pennsylvania Supreme Court decisions, then it's easy because then he would have standing to raise the issue of Connors going into that car and without justifiable cause or reasonable suspicion. But we're not in that land. We're in the land of Hertz, not the owner of the car, not the driver of the car. He's in the truck with a gun, So we have to kind of go from there.
One piece, Your Honor, just to back up a minute, in terms of the field sobriety test, I mean, there was a decent amount of testimony in the record near the end of the transcript having to do with the time it takes to do a field sobriety test, what the steps are. The facts here are Officer Gonzalez escorts the driver to the back of the vehicle and for a minute gives us preliminary questions, where you're going, how much you've been drinking. The testimony.
He asked him that at the back of the truck. That's before he gets to the car. At the back of the truck, he asked him that.
Correct, Your Honor. And those questions are a lead up to the actual field sobriety test, which I think there's testimony in this, include an eye check, walking the line, not all of which Officer Gonzalez ultimately did, but he was the questions at the beginning of the back of the truck. Those are just a lead up to the actual field sobriety test. Okay. About 60 seconds of preliminary questions. Hey, where are you going? How much you had to drink? He hadn't actually started the field sobriety test yet. And that's what makes sense. He paused at that point.
I mean, why would you concede that that's not the officer? That's not part of the sobriety test. I mean, can't you make the assertion that seeing whether somebody can converse and whether their speech is slurred and whether they can carry on an ordinary discussion is part of the sobriety test? I'm not sure why you're laying that on the table, but even assuming everything Judge McKee said was right, which is this was a wacky sobriety test. Nobody, even the defendant, I don't think, is arguing here that there wasn't a DUI, a valid DUI sobriety test going on. So the real question is, you know, do we accept your argument, which is you can separate these two officers and a legitimate safety concern on the part of one stands completely independent of the bad actions of the other? Because just take it for the sake of discussion that we all thought Officer Cannon might be a fine police officer, but he made an error in judgment that put all this in motion. So we're spending all this time talking about it because he got in a truck when he should not have. And everything might have unfolded exactly the same if he'd kept his body out of the thing and just shown his flashlight in and talked to the people. But that's not the world we're in. He chooses to get in. And your argument is that has no bearing on this. It doesn't matter that Officer Cannon does something that's clearly violative of the Fourth Amendment because Officer Gonzalez is an independent actor. And I hear Mr. Schweitzer's argument being, you can't treat it that way. Otherwise, you incent, now I'm putting words in his mouth, but the assertion seems to be you're incenting bad behavior. You're allowing people to go up and maybe with a wink and a nod, you go do this and then I can have a safety concern and come save the day. And we're still going to be okay. That's sort of the competing argument we're having here because of the way you're framing your argument. And that's why I'm wondering why you're framing the argument the way you are.
On that piece, Your Honor, and I think I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that the questioning wasn't related to the DUI investigation. My point was that there are actual steps to a DUI test, and he hadn't gotten to those steps yet. He was just part of the overall investigation, asking background questions before he got to the actual test. Still on mission is my point on that.
But if that's the case, that if he hadn't really gotten to the actual test yet, and he stops, that seems to move the pendulum in terms of when the Rodriguez moment happened substantially forward, because I was looking at it in terms of he's having the sobriety test and he breaks it off. And at that point, the snapshot that Mr. Schweitzer talks about, what does it look like? But you're saying, well, we're not even there. He hadn't really started the actual field sobriety test yet. And he broke off actually starting it. He deferred having this sobriety test to go check on what Connor was doing. That to me, well, from the point of the government, is more problematic.
Well, Justice McGee, I think I'm not presenting this clearly. So the test doesn't have to deal with whether he actually started a DUI test. There was a DUI investigation. Now he's entitled to perform a DUI investigation. One step might be the test. He hasn't quite gotten there yet. He smells alcohol. He's not quite sure. The guy admits to having a drink. So he starts asking him, you know, is he slurring when he's answering my questions? Is he being direct with me? It's just preliminary questions before he actually decides to do the test. But that's all part of the lawful on-mission DUI investigation.
That's helpful.
To Judge Jordan's point, though, I mean, all of the, starting with Rodriguez and going forward, all of the case law on this issue, it bakes into the fact pattern that one officer is off mission. And so long as the other officer remains on mission, then the off-label question, like they asked me about the United States versus I believe it's Clark, Your Honor, and I think you were on this panel. It involved an officer returning to the car after the DOA stop was over and asking about criminal history. Well, clearly there's no basis for the criminal history, right? Entirely pretextual at that point, not safety related. But baked into those decisions is that when you have one officer off-label and one off mission and one officer on mission, so long as the on-mission officer is pursuing his mission, it doesn't create a Rodriguez problem. It might create a completely different problem, a completely different Fourth Amendment problem, and there's remedies for that. But it doesn't create a Rodriguez problem because the stop is not unlawfully extended unless both of them are off mission.
Okay. Now, I understand that argument that you're making. What if we asked the question? You heard the extended dialogue I had with Mr. Schweitzer, and he's a pro. He was parrying me at every step. But I would like you to engage in that same analysis with me. Two points. First, does the record support an argument that even accepting Mr. Schweitzer's view of the world, that the one officer's behavior taints the other, they go down together. Even accepting that, Officer Gonzalez doesn't stop what he's doing until there's already a basis on the record to say reasonable suspicion had arisen. That's the first question. And the second question is, if that weren't true, is there a place for attenuation here as a point of decision, or have you waived that completely?
So Your Honor, on the first point, I think that is a valid argument. And Mr. Schweitz is right. We didn't specifically make the argument that perhaps the reasonable suspicion was developed at some earlier point while Officer Cannon was in the car before Officer Gonzalez allegedly went off mission. And the record shows, I mean, from the very beginning, he's flashing his light back and forth. The testimony is from the very beginning, they weren't listening to his directives to keep their hands visible. He thought that the one passenger in the front seat was trying to distract him from speaking to Mr. Hurt. That evidence is fully supported by the record. And if you look at it in the light most favorable to the government, the standard for the denial of a motion to suppress, I do think there's enough to get you there factually. On the attenuation piece, Your Honor, and Mr. Schweitzer, again, is correct. We did not specifically make that argument.
But he's saying it's worse than that. He's saying you waived it. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, no, Your Honor, I agree with Your Honor, and I'll defer to the law. But my understanding of the law is that as long as there's a reasonable factual basis to come to a legal conclusion, you can find a different way to resolve the case. Now,
not if you waived it. I'm trying to get you to engage with his. He says you chose to make an attenuation argument with respect to the statements at the station house. So you know how to make an attenuation argument. You chose not to make it as to this other, and that should constitute a waiver. I'm trying to get you to engage on that point.
Yeah, I don't think that constitutes a waiver, Your Honor. We didn't firmly waive anything. The only waiver argument that Mr. Schweitzer is making is he argued in his response brief that we're not making the argument. And we didn't, or in his reply brief, we didn't file a surreply and say he's wrong, that argument's still out there. Frankly, Your Honor, I'm not sure exactly how the attenuation argument works here. I just haven't thought about it. I'm not fluent enough with the law to be able to sort of spar with you on the attenuation piece. But I will say that if there's an attenuation argument there, we can submit a post argument letter on it and brief the issue, and happy to engage on it.
Okay.
Anything further? It went so quiet, I thought everybody froze. So
no, I mean, I am curious about this, but I'll take up whether we want 28J separately with you and Judge Fuentes after we've concluded argument. But
okay, I would like to get a trend. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do think it does come down to the end of the day, I think evaluating the safety of the officers here. And a lot of this case law, I think, is trying not to parse the reasonable safety precautions an officer takes. That's why there's that exception in there to begin with, because you don't want to have to be in a situation where you're having to second guess an officer's decision about whether he's going to help his partner based on whether or not. Yeah,
you know, that's true. And I think, I mean, and I've said it many times in opinions, and I said it publicly many times. I mean, I could not imagine a police officer doing a traffic stop. And I mentioned a conversation I had with one of my daughters when we were young one time driving down the street, and there's a traffic stop. And because the officer never knows when you pull that car over, you never know what you're dealing with. You might be dealing with somebody who's late to dinner. You might be dealing with somebody who's got an outstanding homicide warrant. You don't know. We just don't know. It's very dangerous, but and the law allows for that. But it seems to me that if we get into a situation where legitimate safety concerns can give rise to the kind of exception that you're arguing to Fourth Amendment precautions, the exception weed up the rule, because any pair of police officers worth their soul, if they keep on the law, keep up with the law, can get around that. With the others, in this situation, Officer Gonzalez goes over. Let's assume that there's an equally valid sobriety test that takes 15 minutes and there's one that takes 5 minutes. And he knows that, like, if I give this guy the 5 minute sobriety test, we don't really have time to check anybody out. But if I give him the 15 minute sobriety test, my partner's got time to really get over there, check out the car, and I legitimately are going to cover for him. So I'm going to break off my sobriety test and go cover for him. So I'm going to give this guy the 15 minute sobriety test. And lo and behold, 12 minutes into the sobriety test, he turns around and there's Connor looking around inside the car, shining his flashlight, and he goes, "Ah, I've got to break off my sobriety test here, my 12 minutes into my 15-minute sobriety test. I'm concerned about my partner. I got to go cover him." We can't allow a situation like that to be created, even though there was a legitimate concern for one officer's safety on the part of the other. I mean, and you're making this seem like a very, very horrible dilemma that the police officers have. Look, the police officer's decision is going to be, I'm going to cover my buddy. And if that means that we cover something and get a conviction that doesn't stick, we get a conviction that doesn't stick. But it's more important to me that I get my buddies back than I worry about the fine points of a case called Rodriguez and Mims and Green and Clark and all these other esoteric things. I don't give a shit about that right now. I got my buddy's life on the line. It's not in the real world. I wouldn't imagine that it's that much of a heavy duty intellectual balancing conflict that you're trying to make it out. And the individual police officer, I can't imagine he thinks that way or she thinks that way.
Well, that might be the case, Turner, but I think here, I mean, the hypothetical you laid out is not the facts we have here. The facts here is he went to check on his partner 3 minutes into the stop.
I mean, yeah, but it's the cases we write, they go beyond, even we're at a point now, even our NPOs seem to be relied upon as precedent by lawyers. So whatever we write in this case is going to be applied to other situations, and it's going to come up in the case where there's the 15-minute traffic stop as opposed to the 5-minute traffic stop. It's not a line we can draw.
But the shield for that, Your Honor, that what prevents that from happening are the built-in parameters of the safety precaution has to be not pretextual, right? It has to be actually real. It can't be a fake safety precaution. And it has to be reasonable in its own right. And that's what the U.S. v. Garner, the earlier Third Circuit decision went into, was trying to assess how long is reasonable for a safety precaution. Is it, at some point, does it become pretextual? At some point, does it become unreasonable? And in that case, it held 10 to 15 minute delay for an officer to call for backup when he was concerned about his safety because it was getting dark and because he was smaller than the suspect. The court held that was negligibly burdensome under that on that record. So we know here, you know, if the 10 to 15 minute standard was okay in Garner, here we're talking about the 2 minutes it took for Officer Gonzalez to go check on his partner to make sure he was okay. And I think, I think these facts are strong enough to be limited on their own facts. I think this is a case where it's important to come down on the side of not second guessing a undisputably legitimate safety concern that one officer had.
Okay, even though the safety concern was one that was created by the officer himself.
If that's the premise, Your Honor, I disagree with that premise, but even if, unbeknownst to the Officer Gonzalez, even if the safety concern was caused by one officer going off mission,
Yeah, because it's not the officer himself in our case. It's the other officer that creates the problem, right?
Right, correct. The officer Gonzalez, he didn't create any problem. He was continuing with his duties. And had Officer Cannon not been off mission, nobody would be here arguing anything. Otherwise, he went to check on his partner. No big deal. That's what happens all the time out in the field. And that doesn't add time to the stop. But because the reason why he was doing it, if the premise is he was off mission, if Cannon was off mission, I don't think that that creates a taint on the safety precaution exception for all the reasons that I've discussed.
Might you think, Mr. Newcomer, that the time of day, which is apparently very, very late, and the place where this occurred have an effect on our decision? One way or the other. The time of day, it was very late. It was, as I understand it, in a very isolated place.
I do think that plays into it, and that was sort of my one of my opening arguments, that it was you can't say on this record that the only reason that Officer Gonzalez went to check on Officer Cannon was because he was in the car. There was lots of other attenuating circumstances. I'll give you, it's obviously he knew he was in there. He testified he knew he was in there. He saw him in the car. I don't agree with the narrative that the only reason he went to check on him was because he was in the car. I think he would have checked on him regardless, but certainly, when you consider the fact, the time of the day, the high crime area known for gun violence, and let's not forget, one of the passengers in that car was visibly intoxicated, admittedly intoxicated. So yeah, I have a situation, 2 a.m, 2 people, one officer's outnumbered, one of the guys is really drunk, and one officer just wants to step over to make sure that his partner's okay before continuing. I think that's entirely reasonable under these facts.
Okay, I don't know how the drunk thing cuts one way or the other. Someone who's that intoxicated is not going to have the world champion eye-hand coordination to do anything. So I'm just not sure if that cuts one way or the other. I just don't know if it's a relevant consideration. One thing that really struck me, and it's not really part of this case necessarily because the officer didn't rely upon it, was the fact that Officer Connors seemed to be partly suspicious because these guys were nervous. And I read that. I can't tell you how many suppression hearings in common police court were. Part of what led into the probable cause was the fact that the officer approaches the fellow on the street and the guy's nervous. But that's neither here nor there. But I just, it troubles me whenever I see that playing into the mind of a police officer, this guy's nervous. But that, again, that's neither here nor there.
Judge McKee, I read the same testimony. Obviously, that was part of the record. I think from the overall explanation Officer Cannon gave, that was not his primary reason. It was actually the furtive movements.
No, I agree. Certainly
that was on the record that one of the reasons was the nervousness.
Right. And who wouldn't be? You have black guys in North Philly at 2 a.m. being pulled over by 2 police officers. They better be nervous. My God, if they weren't nervous, that would be very, very suspicious. Okay. Mr. Spicy, you reserve some time, I think.
Sure, yes. Thank you, Judge McKee. Judge Fuentes, if I could just pick up on your question there. The late hour, the other circumstances. The issue here is not as Mr. Newcomer has framed it, is the only reason that he stopped the DUI because he was in the car. That's not the issue. That's the issue instead is, was that the causal factor? Was that the tipping factor? And clearly it was. These officers knew everything, late hour, suspect ratio, area, high crime, whatever you want to throw in there, they knew it. They were at the car for 2 minutes. They saw the whole situation and they proceeded with the DUI. There was no issue until the added factor comes along. So, we're not arguing that you can't look at any of that stuff. We're looking at the record here, and the record is inescapable.
Engage Mr. Schweitzer, if you would, head on with the argument Mr. Newcomer has made that, okay, give you all that. It is not good policy and not sensible and not supported by the case law to say that one officer making a knucklehead move taints the behavior of the other officer, that it is entirely reasonable. In fact, it would have been derelict for the other officer not having thought there's a safety problem now, not to go over and check, and that's something we don't want to disincent.
The short answer, Your Honor, is it's not up for debate anymore. Rodriguez says safety in service of an off mission detour does not count.
I mean, I think Mr. Newcomer would say you're continuing to conflate the two officers, and you're not supposed to do that. It may be that Officer Cannon is clearly off mission at that point, but Officer Gonzalez isn't off mission. He's still doing his DUI work, and then he has a safety concern, which is consistent with his mission. It's not inconsistent with the DUI investigation to have a safety concern for your fellow officer. So you're not off mission, even if your colleague is. And the fact that your colleague is, and that's what prompted you, doesn't convert your behavior into off mission behavior. That's the thing I think he's saying, and what I'm trying to get you to address.
Yes, and the issue is factual. And the issue that goes to what was the cause of him pausing the investigation. If we all agree that the triggering factor is that Cannon was in the car, in the truck, and we all agree that's off mission, then the issue is his pause then is not caused by the DUI mission or the circumstances or anything else. It's caused.
All right. Then you don't have to go any further, because I take your argument. Your argument is you can't separate them. No matter how pure of heart Officer Gonzalez is, because of Cannon's behavior, he's off mission the moment he does anything to stop the DUI and assist Cannon. That's the legal position Cannon could be Mother Teresa, and it doesn't matter. His motivations evaporate. It's all about Cannon, period. That has to be your position, and that's the position you're taking, right?
It is the position, but let me put a soft glove on it, Your Honor, because I don't think Your Honor said, oh, he made a knucklehead move. It was kind of like, oh, this is a trip up, and then boom, there goes the validity of the stop. We have to take a step back here. Rodriguez is a counterweight to Wren. And the officers, and I agree with your point, Judge McKee, I sympathize with officers. I sympathize with Officer Gonzalez here. I sympathize with any officer who at a late hour or any time approaches a traffic stop. It is dangerous that no one's denying that. That's why the law builds in all sorts of mechanisms for the police to take advantage of. MIMS, Moorfield, all of that stuff. We don't even have to go over it. And even in the Rodriguez context, as I said in the beginning, this stop could have lasted an hour. There's no magic number here. If what in fact was happening was a pause or an extension of the stop because the circumstances and the DUI and the mission necessitated an extension for safety, no problem. But that's just not.
But your argument is also that had he said, I don't care if they shoot Cannon, I never liked him anyway, and he just kept talking about the DUI stuff long enough for Cannon to get him out of the car and frisk him, your argument goes away because the Rodriguez moment, there was no pause. That's the legal position, right?
That's right, Your Honor, but it's not arbitrary. We look at cases as they unfold. There's an important background principle here that the Supreme Court has started to articulate in Rodriguez, which is that's not what traffic stops are for. Officer Cannon dove into that truck, and
Ignoring Officer Gonzalez, but that's the position take, and I get it.
And that's what we do in Fourth Amendment. We look at the totality of the circumstances. We look at everything. We don't divide and look at the subjective intent. And boy, Gonzalez was in a bad position. Cannon put both of them in a bad position. It was dangerous to get in that truck with two people he didn't really know anything about. And that's what happened here.
We're all together on that, Mr.
Yeah, Spencer. It really was dangerous. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Your Honors. I know you indulged some extra time on both of our behalfs. I think it's nice seeing you both.
Nice way to tell us to shut up, Mr. Spencer. Okay, Mr. Newcomer, I don't think I've seen you before, but really a pleasure. Very, very well argued. Mr. Spicer, we always expect his best game. He always brings it. But as Judge Jordan said, he he buried your argument very well, and you did really just very, very well. So hopefully I'll see you again soon. You did a remarkably fine job, as Mr. Schweitzer did, but again, it's kind of patronizing, but we always get a fine job from Schweitzer. So he's the public defender, Zosmer.
Yeah. Thanks so much, both of you.
Thank you. Can we get a transcript? Greg, can we ask him, and we'll have the government pay for that?
Sure, Judge.
Great. Thanks a lot. Okay.